Cape Talk, new beginnings.
Today we're reflecting on whether South Africa needs something of a new beginning in its approach to women in leadership roles. Quite fitting, really, that we're having this conversation in a week that could potentially, in fact, see a woman take on the highest office in the land. Tomorrow that could happen, even if it is only on a temporary basis. But, you know, we know our constitution guarantees equality of the sexes. But the question is, are we putting it into practice in the workplace? And if not, why not? Joining me in studio to discuss this further are three guests from UCT's Graduate School of Business who all have an interest in seeing women taking on more and making more of the opportunities for leadership in this country. It's a great pleasure to welcome Jenny Boxall, who's a management development expert, Kameshni West, who's the director of GSB's extensive education department, and Sue von Hirschfeld, who lectures on the Developing Women in Leadership program. Thanks for all of you for being here. Welcome.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, in May, some of our listeners might recall, I chatted to a representative of Grant Thornton about their latest report on women in business. And she told me only 28% of senior management roles in South Africa are held by women. And I think the figure was as many as a third of businesses have no women in senior management whatsoever. There are obviously lots of reasons for that, not least of all centuries of patriarchy still to be overcome that have told us women don't belong in the workplace. How do we compare to the rest of the world? Kameshni, do you have a sense of how our stats stack up versus global stats?
So globally, when we think about, I'll start with Africa. When we think about leadership and women leading in Africa, only 5% of the women in management positions are at a CEO level, compared to about 8% at a global level. So, you know, it's not a huge difference in what's happening globally versus locally. And in South Africa in itself, we only have 3% of women that are represented at a CEO level. While we have 28% of women leading in senior roles in South Africa, I think we are still seeing that there's a huge amount of potential in our women that are in junior management roles, middle management roles, but it's just unlocking that potential, giving them a platform to really step up and step forward for these roles.
Jenny, I know this is something that you're particularly passionate about. Why is it that women aren't making that leap from the junior and middle management to the very senior management? Is it about companies not allowing them to, or is it perhaps partly something to do with women themselves not stepping up for the opportunity?
Pippa, I think it's both. I think a lot of women are not confident that they've got the skills. They don't put their hands up. They don't say, yes, I want to do the job, and yes, I believe I can do the job. And because they don't do that, organizations perhaps doubt what they see. We've at the Graduate School of Business, we have had organizations come to us and say, look, we've got women, but they're not there yet, or they don't believe they're there yet. And that's something that we're trying to address. Can I talk about the course that we're running a little bit?
Please do,
So at the Graduate School of Business, we've developed a Developing Women in Leadership program. And the reason for it is to allow women to come and develop the skills and the confidence so that they can step up, but also to give the organizations an opportunity so that they feel, well, we're doing something, we are helping women get there.
I heard it said for the first time, the term imposter syndrome, and I heard it literally within the last year, and it was like a light bulb going off in my head, because what was described to me was so relevant to what I felt at many times. Could we talk a little bit about what is meant by imposter syndrome as it applies to women?
Sue's the expert on that.
Sue, over to you.
Imposter extraordinaire. No, I think imposter syndrome is defined as a sort of a collection of feelings. It's an internal experience, mostly felt by women, but not exclusively. Of course, it can be men as well, who feel that despite obvious and objective evidence to the contrary, evidence of success, that is, they still feel that they're not quite good enough. And and there's this sense that I'm an imposter, I'm going to be found out at some point, that I'm not really that competent, that I'm a bit of a fraud, that they will find me out at some point. And women, you know, quite prevalent amongst women who are, if you like, first generation professional or even university graduates. So in other words, there's a difference between their profession and their occupation and their family or their parents, or particularly, you know, their mothers and fathers' occupation. So they're trailblazers in their own right, but they're often hamstrung by these feelings of, I don't think I really belong, and they're going to find me out at some point. And that's essentially what the imposter syndrome relates to.
As you said, it's not only exclusively women who suffer from that, but it is very much, I think. I'm interested to hear what you said about, particularly among first-generation graduates and professionals. Is it to do simply with the way we've been socialized, the way we've been brought up to be and to fulfill certain roles as women?
Yeah, absolutely. There may well be some personality characteristics involved, but, I mean, by and large, it's a socialized condition that, and it could be, simple as messages from mothers saying, don't be so intelligent, men don't like intelligent women, you're a bad mother if you want to go back to work, look at who's suffering because of your ambition, those kinds of things. And sometimes for women, they've heard these messages, and then the actual syndrome, as it were, might be triggered by an event such as a failure, something that's gone wrong in the workplace, maybe being overlooked for a promotion, and then suddenly all this comes in, and, well, I never really deserved it anyway. Mm. But, yeah, there's a lot of social conditioning that sits behind that that is very, very hard to manage and to, I don't want to say the word overcome, because that sounds like it's all negative, but to really come to terms with and actually, feel confident and in the right place.
Of course, the elephant in the room we haven't yet mentioned is the fact that we know women don't just finish their work day and go home, no matter how responsible their job is. Most women, many women certainly go home and take on a whole second or third job managing households, managing children. The mental load is something we're hearing discussed a lot, about how much women still shoulder in terms of the everyday organization of households in South Africa. That is something that is slightly starting to change finally, but not certainly at the pace that will result in dramatic changes in the workplace. I mean, Jenny, how big a factor do you think that is, that maybe women don't put themselves forward for the top job because they simply feel, I can't do all of this at the same time, and I know that if I take on the CEO position, things are going to fall apart at home?
I think it's very real. And what is also interesting is it's international. It's not just in South Africa. We refer in our course design to Sheryl Sandberg, her book Lean In.
Yeah.
And she talks about one of her first experiences as a pregnant person, having to waddle across the car park because there's no parking for pregnant women close to the office. And the management just hadn't thought about it. So there are a lot of places, a lot of issues like that internationally where it's just not thought about. So I think it is also an organizational awareness, and getting more women into top positions and then creating awareness of what the real issues are, and creating flexible structures. Having a bigger vote in the organization and knowing just what it is like, because there's no doubt that the women are, who have those responsibilities that you're talking about, are prepared to work at home, work flexi hours, do what it takes. But it just needs some understanding and the structures created to allow them to do that.
And it's a difficulty. You spoke about the trailblazers. Until such time as we have women going out and doing it and showing that it can be done, the hesitance is there that this won't work, and they're always going to be wanting to take time off for the kids, or that reluctance on the part of some men. And it's organizational culture in many cases of not wanting to be flexible in that way. The problem is, until women go out and show that it does work and can work, it's difficult to convince men often to give it a try.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, please.
I think it's also the role models that we've seen that have gone before us, and other women that are in leadership positions and quite senior leadership positions, their resources might be quite different from what a woman at a middle management level is. So when you look at your leader in your organization, that's another female that seems to be able to do these things seamlessly, and they either have kids or they don't have kids, or their kids are actually, in grown up, left the house, and they have more time on their hands. And they are able to send that email at 2 o'clock in the morning or respond to something that needs to be done at 10 o'clock at the, in the evening. And they look like they are just, their whole lives revolve around work. Now, for a woman that's developing in their leadership role and in their career, if you have a role model that's not showing a balance in what you're seeing, it gets quite difficult to aspire to that because you realize that you're sitting from a place where you do have all of these responsibilities. And are we talking enough about how do you manage that? And so our role models are so important in how we are showing up.
Particularly, I'm thinking of showing up physically and hours put in at the office. We live in a society which seems to celebrate the overtime as evidence that you are working better and harder than anyone else, when in effect, maybe it means actually you're just working less efficiently than the woman who went home at 3 o'clock and has actually done it all in that time. How big a problem is that? Sue?
Yeah, can I just talk about trailblazing and running? Not that I'm a runner, but Sheryl Sandberg makes a very good analogy about a marathon running. And she says, you know, this is a marathon. And she said, imagine trying to run a marathon and people at the side of the road saying, I think you should give up. I don't think you're going to make it. Think of everything that's actually you're sacrificing because you're running this marathon. I just said, as opposed to people saying, come on, carry on, you know, you're doing all right, you're doing fine. You know, she said that's sometimes the kind of messages, and sometimes they're very overt, sometimes they're not so overt, that women get when they're trying to run this marathon from being young managers to that more senior thing, where it does often become easier because practically it's easier. But it's all about the messages that those women are receiving and how they're interpreting them and what they do with that information and whether they're able to muster the support from wherever, whatever source.
I was really pleased to see that the UCT Graduate School of Business had organized an event for August where you were getting women graduates of your MBA program to come and meet potential MBA students and speak to other women about their experience and kind of say it can be done. I mean, we always joke about the MBA widows in my day of the long-suffering wives left at home while their husbands went off to do their MBA. What's the breakdown? I'm interested. Do you get a lot of women enrolling for MBAs, for example?
At the moment, our percentage of women is very low on our MBA programs. And I'm speaking specifically about our full-time program. It's a year-long program, and you literally have about 20% of women on the program, or even less. And on our modular program, you generally see a little bit more of a balance, about 40% of women. But still in that as well, there's a lot of consideration for a woman before she even embarks on any management program journey. And maybe I can share a little bit of my experience with you, because I did the MBA and I was on the full-time program. But I did my thesis on women juggling management studies and life and the role of guilt and shame. And part of that was unpacking what support systems women need before they even step into this journey of doing an MBA. And that's what we unpacked in these two events. There was an event in Joburg and there was an event in Cape Town. And we really we had quite a great representation of women. We had about 40 people here in Cape Town and about 25 in Joburg. Women that are already leading in their organizations that want to take that next step. But there are so many questions. It's not about whether they will be able to tackle the content. It's questions about how do I manage my life? And how do I manage my roles? And how do I manage my time? How do I negotiate? And who do I
need?
That's it.
Crucial.
Yeah. And those are the kind of questions that we were asked as the panel. How do you think through, you know, this time, and how much time will I have for my family? And whereas on the flip side, having gone on the program with men, having, you know, I work with quite a lot of the students at the school and have conversations with them. You ask the men how they are doing and how's it going. They're going, it's great. How's the family? They're fine. They're getting on with it.
Why are you asking me that?
Exactly.
I don't know. I haven't seen
a face. Exactly. But I think from a woman's perspective, it's how do I create an enabling environment for me? And it's not just from a family perspective, but what about organizations that they work for? How do you create that opportunity so that I feel completely supported to step in? So yes, these events have been phenomenal in terms of answering those questions that only women ask about these things.
I think in, I mean, we could carry on for another hour. There's so much still to discuss here. But just in conclusion, if I may be a minute or two late for news, I have to point to the fact that, that the statistical evidence is there that women can perform these roles. They can perform these jobs well. And I'm not just talking about one or two odd polls. The Gallup report I'm referencing is based on over 40 years of research and millions of employees. That women can be excellent managers, that they are highly capable if the environment is right to support them in that role. It makes business sense, doesn't it? Who wants to take the final question? It makes good business sense to see women upscaled in this way. Commissioner?
About the diversity, absolutely. Yeah.
So research also shows that when you have more women in leading positions in an organization, in government, when women are policy makers, they are able to get greater return on investment. You get greater returns for your shareholders. You have greater impact in the roles that you play and the world that you are influencing. And just to give you a quick example of that is in the healthcare industry, there are 80% of women that work in the healthcare industry. Only 40% of them are in management positions. But when you see more women in the healthcare leading in policy development, you have more focus on women and child health, which is so important for our country specifically. But besides in the government sector, the health sector, just in business in general, women lead in different ways. Women have a different level of empathy. They have a different level of engagement. They step into conversations in a different way. They're bringing new perspectives into the boardroom, into a meeting, and how they influence. They influence from a place that's quite different from how a man influences. But I mean, just finally, I think the stats show that when you have more women on your boards, when you have more women in senior leadership, when you are driving the outcomes of a business, there's definitely more success for the business.
You've hit the nail on the head with that mention of perspectives. The diversity of perspectives in any way can only be a positive thing to increase the diversity in any organization. I wish we could have carried on for longer. It's been a great pleasure having all three of you with us today. A big thank you to Jenny Boxall, Kameshni West and Sue von Hirschfeld from the UCT Graduate School of Business. And if you want to read up more about their program specifically tackling this issue of developing women in leadership, please do visit their website, gsb.uct.ac.za.